This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The November 6th election is right around the corner, and Newsmakers is bringing you a series of candidate debates and interviews from Western Wisconsin. This week, we're featuring Wisconsin's 94th Assembly District, which represents La Crosse County outside of the city of La Crosse. The seat has been held by Democratic Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska for the past 8 years. He faces Republican challenger Albert Rowland of La Crosse. Rowland informed us late last week of a scheduling conflict for today's debate and declined a request to reschedule. Joining us now in studio is State Representative Steve Doyle. First, can you start by explaining who you are and why you're running to represent the 94th Assembly District?
Sure. I grew up in La Crosse County, grew up first on the north side of La Crosse, moved up to Onalaska when I was in fifth grade. This is my home. This is my community. I've seen a lot of changes over the course of time. La Crosse used to be a place where we never locked our doors. Kids could run around the neighborhood and parents wouldn't have to worry. Sadly, we've seen some changes in that regard. I remember going to school in Onalaska, and we lived what at that point was out of town, and we'd walk through a bunch of fields to get home. That's all houses there now, so we've seen huge amounts of development. We've seen our university go from a school that anybody could get into to one that you fight like mad to get into. It's the second most difficult in the system to get into. So I'm a proud alumni of UW-La Crosse. We've seen our medical facilities become world-class, world-renowned facilities. So I've seen a lot of changes, and I've tried to be a part of it in my adult life, tried to be active in local things, got elected to the La Crosse County Board when I was about 28, 29 years old, worked my way up to be chair of the county board, saw a lot of things happen over the course of time in my county board career, where we try to really focus on getting everybody together, which is kind of the same focus that I've had in the state legislature. We used to have fights between La Crosse and Onalaska, for example, that led to litigation. When I was county board chair, we tried to do a lot of productive things. One of the very first things, in fact, that we did when I was elected county board chair was the Household Hazardous Materials Program, where I went to every municipality in the county and said, hey, you know, everybody can do their own thing, or we could do something together. What do you think if we put together a program that everybody signs on to and everybody pays a little bit of money into? Everybody signed up and still going strong. You know, so that was the first thing that we did collaboratively. Later, we did the West Salem Business Park, which was, again, a collaborative effort with West Salem and CenturyLink and LADCO and XL Energy. At La Crosse County, and it's been a huge success. So it's that kind of message that tells me that I want to keep involved. I want to do the same things at the state legislative level that I did in local government. In this last session, the Speaker's Task Force on Foster Care was a bipartisan task force. I was chosen to be the Democratic co-chair, which I think is an honor, recognizing my brand, my tradition in the legislature of working across the aisle. We like to say that abused and neglected kids aren't Democrats, they're not Republicans, they're children. And the solutions aren't Democratic solutions, they're not Republican solutions, they're human solutions. And we traveled around the state, worked together, both parties, and came up with a package of bills. 11 of them are now law. And I'm proud to be part of that. So I want to continue those types of efforts in Madison. Tired of people yelling at each other, tired of the nastiness, the dysfunction that you see, and I'm hoping that I can be a little part of fixing that.
You've held this state assembly seat for 4 terms now. What has been your biggest accomplishment during that time?
The biggest accomplishment, I think, would have to be the foster care package, just because it's so personal. I remember when I first started practicing law, I did a lot of guardian ad litem work for kids that were in abusive or neglectful situations, and how they were such nice, sweet, innocent kids, and they were put into really bad situations. And sadly, a few years later, I would be in court and I would see those same kids on the criminal calendar. It's like, we failed those kids. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of blame to go around. Certainly, everybody has to accept their own share of it if they, you get in trouble. But these were kids that really were shortchanged from day one. And that's why this was a project when I had the opportunity to be on the foster care task force. I signed up right away because those are their kids. And the more you can do for them, the better. The foster parents, in La Crosse County, we refer to them as everyday heroes, and they are heroes every day, doing incredible job for next to nothing in terms of compensation. So part of our package of bills did things as simple as making grant money available if a foster parent has something special they want to do with the kids. Sign them up for summer recreation class or you know, something that, you know, is useful for the kids. Have a little bit of money available for that. So I'm really, really proud of what we did there. And I'm proud of the fact that those 11 bills passed in both houses on unanimous or near unanimous votes. That shows that there is hope out there that we can work together.
If you're elected to another term, what is your biggest goal?
Biggest goal is to continue what progress we've seen on the package of issues that are most important to what people are talking about. So that would be education, health care, and the economy. So on education, we have both candidates for governor saying they want to be the education governor. Great, I'm all for that. We took $1 billion out of our K-12 school system. We need to put money back, and we're still behind where we would have been had that not happened. Our university system, likewise, huge cuts, and we lost a lot of faculty to other university systems around the Midwest in particular. So education, really important. Healthcare, we've got to make it affordable and accessible, and those aren't necessarily the same thing. Rural Wisconsin has a hard time getting adequate nearby health care. We need to deal with that. And the corollary to the foster care task force is this whole opioid crisis that we're facing. And we've started that. We're not anywhere near done. When we were going around the state, we had people from various human services agencies come in and talk to us. And every one of those human services directors would tell us that somewhere between 60 to 80% of their caseload involved families where drugs were an issue. And usually it was opioids. And I still remember vividly the human services director from Clark County telling us that, you know, so many of those drugs, meth and opioids and those hard drugs, are ones that will get into a person's system, but then they exude through your pores. And so you have a parent holding a child. That child is absorbing the drugs into their system to the point where some of the kids in those cases tested with higher levels of drugs in them than their parents did. And it got to the point where they would send out social workers to those families wearing hazmat suits. I mean, that's what we're facing in Wisconsin, including in rural Wisconsin. So we have a long way to go to ending the opioid crisis, but that's got to be a top priority.
What can the state do to address the opioid problem that we do have in the state?
There's a number of things. We can't incarcerate our way out of the problem, although that certainly needs to be a part of it. We need to have more treatment programs available. And treatment programs with opioids are not like with alcohol. I mean, they're much more intense. There's much greater failure rate. I mean, you're not going to, say a meth addicted person, you're not going to send them to a program and expect that a month, 2 months, 6 months later, they're going to be fixed, if you will. We see so many relapses in those cases, and the funding just isn't there for communities across Wisconsin to have those programs available. Some of the bigger communities have some programs, not enough. But if you get into outstate Wisconsin, there's just nothing there. So, I mean, that is, I would say, the top priority for dealing with the opioid crisis, because if you don't in a perfect world, you'd be preventing the problem. But if you can't prevent it, if you can do that intervention, the cost to society, whether it's jails or treatment programs or broken families or divorces or what have you, is huge. And so it really is an investment of money, not just an expenditure, when you talk about programs to deal with opioids and actually with any drugs, including alcohol.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking with Democratic Representative Steve Doyle, who currently holds Wisconsin's 94th Assembly seat. He'll face Republican Albert Roland in the November election this year. Roland informed us late last week of a scheduling conflict with today's recording and declined a request to reschedule. Road funding continues to be a top issue around the state. In this election, in the past elections we've seen, you're a member of the county board, and which has put several, forth several referendum questions on this in La Crosse County. You know, as someone on both sides of this issue, what do local governments need from the state legislature to tackle the problem of aging roads?
Local governments need two things, funding and flexibility. Let me talk about both of those. The original intent behind state funding of local transportation needs was that the state would be covering 30% of the cost, and I think we're down to around 17% at this point. The governor in the last couple of weeks has talked about increasing funding for local governments. That's great. However, talking about it and doing it are two different things. I want to see it actually happen, because that was the issue that made our last budget 3 months overdue, when the governor and the legislature couldn't get together in terms of how to fund transportation, and it was the governor that simply drew the line in the sand and said, we're not going to increase the gas tax, for example, which is what the legislative Republicans wanted to do. So it wasn't a Democrat versus Republican fight, it was a governor versus Republican legislature fight. So if he's now saying we're going to increase spending, great. He hasn't said, though, where it's going to come from. So are we going to take money from human services used to fight the opioid crisis and use that for transportation? What are we going to do? So I want to see more detail on that. I'm glad he's at least acknowledging that it's a problem. So local governments certainly need the funding. They also need flexibility. With levy limits in place, there's really handcuffs on all of our local governments in terms of what you can spend. So for example, in La Crosse County, we can't raise property taxes anymore to increase our road funding. Not that we want to do that anyway. I mean, that we look at that as really not a good way of dealing with transportation issues, because the property taxpayers are already strapped. We don't have the ability to do the premier resort area tax without legislative approval. That's one of the questions on the ballot, to give us the flexibility to at least consider that. With the wheel tax, that takes a special legislation at the county level to implement that, if we would choose to do that. What we would really like is to have some flexibility on those levy limits, to not that we're going to jack up the tax levy, but to shuffle things around a little bit so that we can make sense of the limited resources that we do have. So funding and flexibility would be the two things.
You mentioned the Premier Resort Area Tax, or mm-hmm. sometimes called PRAT. Mm-hmm. That was an option that La Crosse County voters approved in April of 2017. That, they answered a referendum question saying that they wanted to pursue that as a way for La Crosse County to address road funding issues. You then sponsored legislation to introduce, to create a La Crosse County PRAT. What happened with that legislation? Why was it not, heard?
The committee chair in the state assembly, John Mako from Green Bay, who actually I consider a friend, I was on a couple committees with him, said he just didn't like the idea of increasing taxes, even if it wasn't in his particular area of the state. So he didn't really even want to have a public hearing on it, didn't want the bill to move along. But what I wanted to see after that was to be able to, if it passes again this time, and I, you know, I've said if it passes, I'll introduce another bill. If it doesn't pass, I won't. But if it passes, I want to be able to go back to the legislature and say, the voters of La Crosse County were given a number of options. First option, do nothing. And that is the first question. Do we have a problem or don't we? And if people say we don't, the local government and state government should take that into consideration. But if we do believe that we need to do something, what are the ways that we want to do that? And it's not a mutually exclusive. You could vote yes on all the options or no on all the options, or yes and no as you see fit. So the Premier Resort tax compared to the wheel tax, compared to increasing property taxes, are what the voters have their choice of. So what I really wanted to be able to do is to go to the legislature, if, for example, Pratt comes in at number one, is to say, look, at the voters of La Crosse County didn't like the idea of the wheel tax or increasing property taxes as much as they liked the idea of the Premier Resort Area tax. To me, that's pretty persuasive. On the other hand, you know, people say, we think we should have a wheel tax instead of the Premier Resort Area tax. I'm not going to introduce that bill. I'm going to say, County Board, let's start looking at that option. Or, you know, again, option number three, the borrowing and property tax route on that. I like democracy. In Wisconsin, we don't have the ability to do direct democracy where we, like in California, pass referendum questions that change the Constitution or change the law. But it doesn't hurt to ask people what they think and use the advice that we get from the voters to make decisions that we all have to live with. So we should recognize the fact that they have a right to participate.
Road funding has been talked about in this election and last, and 2 years ago. I mean, this is not a new issue for Wisconsin. So what are you going to do if you're reelected to make sure the legislature actually acts on road funding needs?
Well, you know, the big way, obviously, that we deal with transportation is in the state budget. You know, we have a biennial budget in Wisconsin, and the, you know, current governor, Scott Walker, has already directed his department heads to put together their budget or their proposals. If he's reelected, you know, we'll be going down that route with him, and he's talked about increasing funding. So, you know, I'll certainly be advocating for that. Even if I'm, you know, a member of the opposite party, we can still have common goals. And so I would be advocating with his administration for that. If Tony Evers becomes the next governor, then I certainly would work closely with that administration. And I think the way to do that is to be a productive member of the legislature. And whether it's Tony Evers or Scott Walker, you know, we shouldn't have disagreement on the issue of transportation funding. It's one of those issues that everybody agrees is a problem. I mean, I think we're at that point. Everybody agrees it's a problem. There doesn't necessarily have to be just one route for resolving it. So it wouldn't have to be just increasing the gas tax or just increasing the various registration fees that we pay related to driving. It can be a combination of things so that every different group gets hit a little bit, but one group doesn't get hit the whole way, you know. And so I would work with them and work with members of my caucus to try to put together a package that, you know, maybe if we fight about the rest of the budget but we agree on transportation, maybe the governor should introduce a separate package for us to vote alongside of his budget that would just be on the issue of transportation, so we can all say, yep, we recognize this is a problem, and yep, we came together and we solved it.
That's Democrat Steve Doyle, current representative for the 94th State Assembly seat. He's here with us today for a candidate interview ahead of the November 6th election. His opponent, Republican Albert Rowland, informed us late last week of a scheduling conflict with today's interview and declined a request to reschedule. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. You mentioned bipartisanship earlier, and this is an issue that you've mentioned in your campaign, a quality that you believe you possess. You know, how have you worked in the past? What examples are there of your efforts to be bipartisan?
Thanks for that question, because that is really what I've tried to make, if you will, as my brand. since I've been elected to the legislature. And it goes back to when I was county board chair, and we called it collaboration, working with other units of government. Now in the legislature, collaboration becomes bipartisanship. By the way, if you go to www.mrbipartisan.com, that'll take you to my website. That's how strongly I feel about that particular issue. It's not a big deal, but every session of the legislature, I co-sponsor the same number of Democratic and Republican bills, because that's a way of saying, yeah, there's good ideas on both sides and things that I can support on both sides. I rank among the highest member of the legislature in terms of voting with the opposite party. There are a lot of bills out there that I think are good bills that are worth voting for. And so sometimes the rest of my caucus will vote one way and I'll vote the other way, or maybe two or three of us will vote the other way. I think that's good. I think that's healthy. But probably the most significant is that members of the Republican Party in the State Assembly look at me as the go-to guy. I'm the one that they come to see if they're looking to make their proposal a bipartisan proposal. And, you know, to be able to say, hey, you know, we've got some Democrats that think this is a good idea, too. I'm pretty much always the one that they start with and maybe, unfortunately, end with, too, if nobody else wants to get involved. But I think that's a good thing. When I look at my district, for example, in my district in the last election, Hillary Clinton got 47% of the vote. Russ Feingold got 47% of the vote. In my district, I got 52.6%. My district likes the idea of having people on both sides. They like the idea of people who can work together. They are not, by and large, hardcore Democrats or Republicans. They tend to vote for the person. And that's why they can vote for Donald Trump and Ron Johnson and Steve Doyle all at the same time. And I'm very proud of that.
Is bipartisanship still possible given the current combative culture in politics right now?
It really is. I mean, it's a challenge, but at some point, I think exhaustion takes over and people just get tired of the fight. I mean, I'm seeing that among the voters right now. I mean, people are so disgusted, you know, and they're getting disgusted with both parties at this point. You know, Donald Trump hasn't helped with his tweets and his personal attacks. I mean, I think that coarsens politics, and I just don't see a place for that in politics. But we see that at all levels of government, except really don't see much of that at the local level, I guess. But when you look at the fact that most of the bills that go through the state legislature pass on with at least some members of the minority party voting in favor of them, that says that there is a possibility. The foster care bills that we passed, you know, those were bipartisan bills. People were able to say, yeah, you know, half of those bills were Democratic bills, half of them were Republican bills, and people voted for all of them. You know, so there is, you know, on the big issues, the ones that are so contentious, yeah, it's difficult, you know, whether it's, you know, abortion or guns or, you know, LGBTQ issues. You know, some of those are very polarizing, but your bread and butter issues, that's a place to start. I mean, you can build bipartisanship with little issues and then have that goodwill carry over to the bigger issues. And I don't know, I think the glass is half full.
You mentioned K-12 education earlier. This is always a top issue among voters. What are the greatest needs at schools in your district?
I think the greatest needs are for good quality teachers. What we're seeing is a lot of people fleeing the profession, and at least fleeing the profession in Wisconsin. So a number of people graduating from UW-La Crosse, for example, that would otherwise have stayed in Wisconsin to be teachers are now saying, I'm going to Minnesota or I'm going elsewhere, because they don't feel that it is a career. I mean, it may be a first step, but then, you know, even if they do stay, they tend not to stay very long. Or you see, you know, school district A stealing teachers from school district B, and then school district B stealing them back a little bit later, and you know, you've got all these teachers who are operating as free agents. I saw the number recently about how many of our K-12 K-12 teachers right now have less than 5 years of experience, and I'm thinking it's somewhere like around 25%. That is encouraging that we have young people who are teaching, but it's discouraging when you think in terms of the mentorship that's available from those older teachers who are now just saying, I'm out of here. So that's certainly important. Also, I think that our schools need stability. I mean, we can't be operating from referendum to referendum. You know, we can't worry if our school districts are going to be able to keep the lights on because they are relying upon the upcoming referendum for paying operating costs. You know, if you want to build a new school ball field, it's not the end of the world if that doesn't pass. But if you have an operating referendum to, you know, pay those routine bills and you worry if that's not going to pass, that's not a way to run a school district. It's not good for the school board. It's not good for the kids. It's not good for the teachers. And it's not good for the community. So we need that stability. We need to have that commitment. And, you know, the governor talked recently about supporting that promise from a couple decades ago of the state funding two-thirds of the cost of education. I think that's great. I think that is a really worthwhile commitment to make. But we also have to understand what that number means. I mean, you know, two-thirds of $100 isn't the same as two-thirds of $1,000. So, you know, when the state's going to pay two-thirds, what does that mean for the levy limits and, you know, the requirements that schools not exceed a certain amount of spending? So, you know, not just throwing money at the problem, but selectively targeting our resources, I think, is really important going forward.
The population of Wisconsin continues to grow older. And what does an aging population need from the state legislature?
Well, aging population really, kind of like education, needs some security and stability. So we need to know that healthcare is going to be there, that it's going to be accessible and affordable. You know, obviously, once you get to you know, certain ages, you become eligible for Medicare and so forth. But in, you know, those gap years between when you've got a lot of money coming in and you know, when you're eligible for Medicare, some people are finding that it's difficult. They're finding that they also didn't have enough money put away for retirement. And so, you know, there's great need there. They're finding that they live in homes that they can no longer afford to pay the property taxes for. You know, so that kind of stability, I think, is really important for a certain population of elderly folks. Senior care has been a really important program for taking care of their prescription costs. The governor, in a number of budgets, had proposed getting rid of or cutting back on senior care. In this last budget, he got the message that that's a program that people really want and really support, so he didn't threaten to take it out this last time. I think we, again, want that security and stability, knowing that that program is going to be there. But most of all, I think that seniors, just like everybody else, need to know that we have a good, strong, vibrant economy in Wisconsin, because, you know, if we have more people working, if we have more people sharing the burden of paying taxes, that lightens the load for everybody. And so our property taxes aren't going to go up as fast. Our other taxes aren't going to go up as fast. Our roads aren't going to be deteriorating. You know, so rising tides, you know, lift all boats. It applies to the seniors, too. They're one of the boats that need to be lifted.
How do we attract and maintain younger individuals and families to our state?
You know, I, in my law practice, I deal with realtors all the time. Just by nature of my practice, I do a lot of real estate work and you know, business and general practice. And if you ask a realtor, if somebody from outside of Wisconsin is looking to maybe, you know, take a job, move to La Crosse or wherever else, they don't ask as their first question, you know, what are your taxes like or whatever. They always ask, what are your schools like? You know, we need to have an infrastructure in Wisconsin that people want to come here for. And education is part of that infrastructure. Roads, of course, are part of that infrastructure. And I would say healthcare is also a part of that. So people who have lived in Wisconsin, by and large, have understood that we have, you know, a higher tax burden than some other states. I mean, there's a reason that they live in Wisconsin and not Mississippi, for example. They wanted quality schools, roads, and health care. They want to know that the money is being spent wisely, but they want to know that it's going to be a good place to live and raise a family and hopefully retire in. And so they're going to be looking at our schools. They're going to be looking at our roads. They're going to be looking at our facilities for medical services. They're going to want to know that graduates from our university want to stay here and keep our economic environment vibrant with new, you know, workers and new brains coming into the workforce. You know, so I think that is important. I think that they also want to see less dysfunction, which is where that, you know, two parties getting along is important. I remember talking with our planner here in La Crosse County, Charlie Handy, made a comment that when people are thinking of moving to our community, one of the things that they'll do is they'll look at the local paper and they'll look at the blogs and comments that people post, or they'll look on Facebook and see what people are saying. And if folks are trashing their community, they're trashing their local government, or trashing their schools, or trashing each other, that's not a real incentive for people to come here and say, I want to be a part of that. You know, so to improve the discourse, I think is important too. People want to live in a place where they're going to be happy.
Water quality issues in private wells, I mean, that we saw that play out in Kewaunee County. We're seeing a new study happening in southwestern Wisconsin and Grant and Iowa counties. I mean, this is not an issue alone for La Crosse County. And, you know, how is this, is the government paying enough attention to this problem?
Well, no. I mean, that's been the problem is, you know, when the governor got rid of most of the scientists in the Department of Natural Resources, that was not a good step, and it certainly was not a good sign for the future. We used to have some of the best environmental laws in the country here in Wisconsin, and that unfortunately seems to have gone by the wayside. You know, the problem is when you get rid of those, it may be good for today, like, oh, we're going to make it more possible for some of our local businesses or, you know, corporations to expand their operations. Well, that's great, good for the economy now, but at the cost of what? You know, are we polluting the groundwater? Are we polluting the rivers and streams? Are we damming up those rivers and streams and making them unusable? You know, so I think that's an important issue that people are, I think in Wisconsin by and large, are paying more attention to today than they had been maybe even like 10 years ago. Because I think people are starting to get concerned that, you know, the pendulum has swung too far in terms of, you know, the economic interest outweighs the environmental and health interest. And I think you're going to see politicians more comfortable challenging that approach, you know, going forward, and more politicians saying, you know, yeah, we're just going to have to talk to companies like Foxconn and say, you know, you can't pollute, you can't take 7 million gallons of water per day out of Lake Michigan. We're going to see the mining companies being told you can't pollute the rivers up north, and you know, you don't have to go to the point where you say all economic activity has to shut down. I mean, there is a balance that you can make in that regard. I'm right now in the middle of reading The Bully Pulpit, a book about Teddy Roosevelt, and how, you know, he really saw those things in terms of the long-term benefit of preserving so many areas, pristine areas throughout the United States. But that there was a balance that could be struck. And I think that, you know, people are just looking for a balance.
Why should people of La Crosse County vote for you this November?
I would hope that they would vote for me because they believe that I'm doing a good job, that they believe that I'm a person of my word when I say what I'm going to do, that they believe that I really am an advocate for turning down the temperature and getting both sides to work together. I would hope that they share my vision for the future in terms of improving our roads and schools and healthcare. And I would think that they would say, you know, he's one of us. You know, he's been here. He knows our concerns. He knows our values. He shares our values. You know, if I am rewarded with another term in the legislature, that's my promise, is I'm going to just keep doing what I've been doing.
Democratic State Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska is here with us today for the latest in our series of debates and candidate interviews leading up to the November election. He faces Republican challenger Albert Rowland in this year's race for the 94th Assembly District, which represents La Crosse County outside of the city of La Crosse. Rowland informed us late last week of a scheduling conflict with today's interview and declined a request to reschedule. Coming up, we'll hear an excerpt from a debate between the two candidates running to represent the 94th District. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find other debates between candidates running for office in Western Wisconsin. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. The candidates for Wisconsin's 94th State Assembly seat met for a debate at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse campus this week. A recording of the entire event could be found at wpr.org/newsmakers. Now we'll feature an excerpt of the debate between Republican challenger Albert Rowland of La Crosse and Democratic State Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska. The moderator is UWL political science professor emeritus, Joe Heim.
Next question comes from Mark Wears of La Crosse Tribune.
Our readers value the environment we live in a great deal. It's a beautiful place we live in. The Department of Natural Resources today has fewer scientists and conducts less onerous regulation enforcement than it did 8 years ago. Have those trends benefited Wisconsin?
Roland goes first.
Roland.
I grew up on a farm, so I'm kind of used to the DNR. You know, they're more of a friend. You have to deal with them all the time. Obviously you become more of an environmentalist when you're born and raised on a farm. And that's, I have been a little bit troubled with what's happening at the DNR, because as far as I'm concerned, they were more of a friend on the farm. That's how I got to know them. You know, I knew them as people in green outfits. And you know, that's just, for me it was, I have a little problem with the DNR being cut like it is, because I didn't see them as an evil. I saw them as a friend and kind of a handshake agreement that they looked out not just for you, but everybody around you.
Steve?
The League of Conservation Voters has endorsed me and has given me an award for the third or fourth term in a row as a friend of the environment. And I am proud of that designation. The Department of Natural Resources really should be the front line in protecting our environment. But unfortunately, what we've seen over the last years is an erosion of that authority. When the governor a couple budgets ago eliminated most of the scientists within the department, that wasn't a good sign. When wardens come up to me and say, you know, I don't feel like I'm appreciated or have any use anymore, that's not a good sign. When people in the Department of Natural Resources in Madison, you know, come to hearings and tell me, you know, we don't know what the mission of our agency is anymore, that's not a good sign. It's not a good direction that we're going. We need to recognize that it takes a long, long time to create a good, healthy living environment, but it doesn't take long at all to destroy that. And that's what we're seeing in terms of
The attitude today, unfortunately, looks like it's, you know, if we can make some quick money today, let's not worry about the future. If we can, you know, make some money, even if it pollutes a stream, even if it takes water out of Lake Michigan, even if it makes, you know, the groundwater unsafe for our families, as long as we're making money, that's okay. I don't buy into that methodology. I don't buy into that philosophy. And I'm going to continue to work on behalf of the environment. And I'm hoping 2 years from now, I'm going to be able to stand here again and say that the League of Conservation Voters has again named me a friend of the environment.
Okay, thank you. Next question comes from Dave Soley of WXOW.
Thank you, Joe. What is one issue you would either like to propose or continue to work on that you believe would provide the greatest value for most of the people you represent?
There's a lot of them out there. You know, the foster care project that I was involved in was really important, and we got a start on that, but there's so much more that we can do. But if I had to pick one, I think it's going to be education. Because education isn't an expenditure, it's an investment. It's an investment in our children, it's an investment in our future. And we are in the process of going from one of the most highly respected systems in the country to one that is so-so. And that is not acceptable. In my law practice, I work with people in the real estate business all the time. And if you ask any realtor, you know, if somebody is thinking of moving into your community, what's the first question they ask you? They don't ask, you know, what are the taxes like, believe it or not. They ask, what are your schools like? They want to move into a place where their kids are going to get a good education. And if that realtor has to say, well, you know, schools are okay, but hey, you know, we've got whatever, that's not going to be good enough. That's not a recipe for good economic development in your state or in your community. So I want to see us recommit to that idea of the state picking up the cost of two-thirds of the cost of education. I think that is critical. I think we have to get out of this operation by referendum. When a school district has to go to referendum to keep the lights on, to pay for their operating expenses, that means that the state is no longer paying those costs. Those are shifted to the property taxpayers. That isn't fair. That's not a good, stable, secure way to run an educational system. So that's where I would put my greatest effort, is to making our schools, again, second to none.
Okay. Mr. Rowland?
My feeling is actually infrastructure. Roads, bridges, broadband internet. It's not just the state or the county or the district. It's also all over the United States. We were not actually able to fly in a couple of bases in the last month, just because, oddly enough, the airport just wouldn't support our C-130. It's a nationwide challenge. But also, at the same time, regardless if you have a healthy economy or a poor economy, specifically in a healthy economy, you need those roads, bridges, infrastructure, just to continue to either get the economy running or continue to keep the economy going. You can have the best schools in the world, but if you can't even get to the school, kind of defeats the purpose of having a great school. You're out in the middle of nowhere, and how do you get there? Oddly enough, 90 to 95% of the world's goods, stuff you get from Amazon, it comes through on a set of wheels. Not by an aircraft, not by sea or ship, it gets there on a set of wheels. And infrastructure is the way is how it gets there. It should account for 60% of any municipality's budget, keeping that up to date. And we have failed. It's nationally, state, county-wise, and district-wise. But it is a challenge, and it's an attainable challenge to upgrade, if not fix.
Thank you. Next question comes from Hope Kirwan, WLSU. Goes to Albert.
Recent testing by the La Crosse County Health Department found 30% of private wells tested in the town of Holland and the town of Onalaska exceeded the federal limit for nitrates, a chemical compound linked to a variety of health problems. What can the state legislature do to help residents who have contaminated wells and prevent future contamination?
Well, my immediate belief is fund the DNR more than, versus cutting it, fund it better. And yes, add the scientists back in. Now, we obviously don't want to see Detroit happening here in those two towns. But It also would help if we had enforced the environmental laws before you even got that far. And that it shows what you don't, when you neglect to keep that careful balance of enforcement of environmental laws, and not just environmental laws, but just common sense. You know, I grew up on a farm. It's, you are the steward of the land that you're living on. And it's not going to be just your generation. It's going to be future generations. And it's more so neglect as to what has happened in that town.
Okay. Thank you. Steve?
Again, I want to give kudos to our county government. They are the ones who caught this issue. They are the ones who pushed this issue. This happens to be in my state assembly district, and so it is a really significant issue for me. With regard to what we can do, the health department, when this issue first came about, suggested that we have legislation related to notifying homeowners when toxicity or contamination is discovered in wells in their particular area. Our La Crosse area delegation introduced legislation, made it through the assembly, didn't make it through the Senate. We're going to do it again. I also asked the health department to send me a copy of the report from their study committee to my Madison office to see what suggestions that they have in their series of recommendations require some state involvement. Sometimes it would require state legislation. Sometimes it would require administrative rule changes. Sometimes it would just take a little bit of cheerleading to push things along and to bring some attention to those issues. And so I wanted to get on top of that so that when we go back into session in January, we have legislation ready to go.
Thank you. Next question comes from WISDOM's Brad Williams.
I want to get back to roads and transportation. La Crosse County especially is going to look at funding options, asking people on referendum to decide what they prefer as far as local funding to repair roads, to build roads and bridges. And it is involved in the governor's race as well, candidates asking should everything be on the table. What would you propose as what you would like to see done to give more road money to the local governments? What would be the best way?
I've talked with a lot of our local businesses, whether it be Quick Trip or City Brewing or some of our small mom and pop operations, and every one of them says the same thing. We can't just ignore the problem. We can't just pretend it's going to get better. It's going to take some heavy lifting to deal with this, and that heavy lifting comes in the form of we have to figure out a way to raise revenue. My preferred route in that regard would be to have a modest increase in the gas tax, 5 or 10 cents per gallon, and let's see what kind of a start that provides. That, by the way, is the same position that my Republican colleagues in the legislature had in the last budget go-round. You recall that our state budget passed 3 months late because the fight between the governor and the Republicans and the legislature was over the issue of transportation funding. I support what Robin Voss and my Republican colleagues in the legislature were trying to accomplish because they recognized that this is a problem that needs to be addressed and it needs to be addressed now. I was glad to hear that Governor Walker is finally coming around and saying we need to increase spending for our roads in the state of Wisconsin. What he didn't say was where that money is going to come from. So does that mean that he is open to any particular type of a tax or an increase in fees or what? We're not sure about that. We also know that in the past he has said, well, if we increase something here, we've got a decrease over here. So where is that going to come from? You know, going back to my comments about foster care, if we start to take money away from kids and families for the roads, that, you know, that's not a good choice. That's not the way I want to look at the situation. What I want to do is to figure out, you know, where can we get some consensus? I've said I think that a modest increase in the gas tax makes sense. It's probably going to involve some sort of a combination of things like minor fee increases and, you know, economization and so forth. But, you know, I think we need to start talking.
Mr. Olin.
Well, I have talked to the governor, and it's probably been in the last 60 days, and I agree with him. We may have to increase the gas tax, but commencement with either eliminating taxes or outright reducing, in a broad sense, the taxes all the way around, and to kind of balance so that we're not taxing more. It's kind of an even balance. So yes, something is going to, you know, either eliminating taxes or as a whole reducing taxes to compensate for the increase in the gas tanks. I agree with that. It's you know, Wisconsin being one of the higher tax states, it's not a bad option. Sharing the load for what should have been addressed generations ago.
Albert Rowland of La Crosse is the Republican candidate in this year's race for Wisconsin's 94th State Assembly District. He'll face Democratic State Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska in the November 6th election. We've been listening to an excerpt of a debate between the two candidates recorded this week at UW-La Crosse. Audio of the entire debate is available now on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. And that's it for Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, including our interview with Representative Steve Doyle, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.